This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
So, welcome, folks. Glad you braved the weather again to be here for our Quail Seed lecture series. Just to remind you, we are doing a series on St. David's core values. And you can read about all the core values and testimonies, actually, from different parishioners about the ways in which they engage those core values on the St. David's website. But I thought it would be great at the beginning of the year to invite some folks to help us think more deeply about those core values in terms of how they manifest in the world, but also what that might mean for us in our own lives and here at St. David's. And so today we do have Sean Welling, who's regional representative for Plant with Purpose. Plant with Purpose is no stranger to St. David's. We've heard about them off and on for several years now because of our environmental guild. So I'll just put a little plug in for our environmental guild. They are going to be, they haven't set their meetings yet for this year, but they will be meeting monthly, and they'll be meeting at the 10 o'clock hour. So hopefully they'll be on Sunday. So hopefully that will encourage some participation. So there's some handouts in the back, and Sean can tell you more about the handouts that he brought, but there is one handout there on recycling, compliments of our environmental guild, so if you want to take that. And then there's also just a sheet back there with the listing of St. David's core values. So if you're just kind of curious to see them all listed, there's a handout back there as well. Just to remind you, too, that we do have folks on Zoom, and so when there's time for question and answer, if you would just come to this microphone, that way folks on Zoom can hear your comments. And then lastly, the next time we will have the final installment of our core value series will be in a few weeks. It'll be February the 11th, because we have parish meeting next weekend, our annual parish meeting. And then we have the Eckhart Mission Series the first weekend in February. Dean Cynthia Kittredge from Seminary of the Southwest will be our speaker. So we'll take a little break, and then we'll pick up and end our series on the core values with a new professor from Seminary of the Southwest, Dr. Ben King. He's professor of church history, and he'll be talking to us about grace. And so I'm excited to hear what he has to say about that in the Episcopal context. Yeah, Edna.
Put something about mentoring film.
Yes. Yeah. Can you say a little more about that? Yes. Yeah. So we got word just last week that there is a documentary film called A Case for Love that has been produced by the Episcopal Network. And it's a documentary based on Bishop Michael Curry's message, The Way of Love. And so it features interviews with different people from different backgrounds, looking at issues of racial justice, LGBTQ inclusion, creation care. So it's premiering on January 23rd. That's this Tuesday, nationwide. There are several places that it's showing in Austin. And on the if you go to St. David's website or the newsletter that came out on Friday, there's a link that will take you to all the places that it's showing in Austin. We're going to gather at Bee Caves Galleria at the Cinemark at the Bee Caves Galleria at 7 o'clock on Tuesday for that showing. So if you want to join us, that's where a group from St. David's will be, but you're welcome to go wherever is closest to you to see it. And then over Wednesday night dinner, we will talk about the movie. So come to Wednesday night dinner on, at 5:30, and we'll gather around a table and have a conversation about the film. So that's
a quick question about that. Does the movie start at 7?
Yeah, the movie starts at 7. They get there a little bit before, and you can purchase the tickets online. The tickets are $14.95. So, and if you have any, if you need assistance with purchase of a ticket, see me, and I'm glad to help you with that.
Well, Gateway is a little closer.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. 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 So I wanted to just, so that's where,
So just see it wherever is closest to you. And then please come and have a discussion with us on Wednesday night. All righty. Okay. Well, Sean, thank you for being with us today. And I'm going to turn it over to him and just share what you have for us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Can you all hear me? My name is Sean Welling, and I'm with an organization called Plant with Purpose. And I want to say first a thank you to Mona for the invitation to be here. As she had mentioned, Plant with Purpose and St. David are no stranger to one another. We have had others like me. My predecessor had come and spoken here a few years ago. And then I want to give an extra special thanks to Art Boone and his lovely wife, Sandy, who I've begun a wonderful friendship with over the past year as I have joined Plant with Purpose, at Thanksgiving of 22. So it's just been a short stint for me, and it just took me too long to find Plant with Purpose. I wish this was my life's work. A little bit about me, I served in the Episcopal Church as a music leader. I'm an ordained pastor, not in the Episcopal tradition, but in non-denominational. And my wife and I spent many years in youth ministry in the United Methodist Church. But I was confirmed by Bishop Monteroso just 3 or 4 years ago. And I am very fond of the Episcopal tradition and for what it stands for and what it seeks to invite its members into. And so I'm grateful to be in an Episcopal church this morning speaking to you all. Who is Plant with Purpose? You'll see this if you ever visit our website or read a grant application. We are a Christian nonprofit organization, and we reverse deforestation and poverty around the world by transforming the lives of the rural poor. Our work operates at the nexus of environmental restoration, economic empowerment, and spiritual renewal. We exhibit and try to live into these core values, and we speak of them every week in a staff meeting of the 45-ish North America staff, and I guess it's no longer just North America. We have one situated in Israel, and but the remainder of our kind of backline staff is in the U.S. and Canada. Faith leads the way for us. We don't seek to honor a particular Christian tradition, yet we follow the teachings of Christ the best we can as an organization. Empowerment in building capacity and strength within one another, within our international staff, and within the folks that we work with in the 9 countries, our partnering farmers and families. Collaboration, we work together in partnerships. The folks that we work with in the 9 countries that we share our programs with are our partners. They're not projects for us. We invest 5 to 12 years in a community before they finally say, look, we can do this on our own. Thanks for what you've taught us. Innovation, we are learning and improving constantly, and that's a core value that we try to live into more faithfully every day. Stewardship, obviously that is a key component of any nonprofit. However, we feel like we strive for excellence in a way that we hope is unmatched by anyone, at least in our effort and in the heart of what we do. And then sustainability. We want to foster long-term growth, long-term healing, long-term flourishing in everything that we do. As a North America-based staff, and certainly in the countries where we work, we want to foster sustainability. And I think we found the ways to do that, as you'll see. We're guided by a few scriptures as we live into our work And as we seek faithfulness in our core values and in our purpose, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. Psalm 24:1. We have a mandate to care for creation. Our first calling as humans is to be caretakers of creation, and we are guided by a couple of key scriptures found in Genesis. And then we can love our neighbors through the environment. And that is the Micah 6:8, to seek to do justice and love mercy, love kindness, and to walk humbly with our God. One thing that's not up here, one scripture that's not up here that guides my work, is Romans 8:19 through 21. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the children of God, for the creation was subjected to futility, not of its own will, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to decay and will obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. I'm guided by that scripture, especially as we look at the world that we live in that is deteriorating. Climate change, whether you are sold on the science or not, is real and you see it. And the ones most affected by it are the ones that have the least ability to impact it or have the least negative impact on it. And we see that. We see that very clearly. The problem that we address, and I'll give a brief history. We started as a tree planting organization. We were called Floresta 40 years ago. 1984, we began in the Dominican Republic, just working to reforest the Dominican Republic. And we realized that there's an inextricable link between poverty and the plight of the environment. Those folks that rely on the earth for their very survival are affected so dramatically and immediately by climate change, as temperatures are no longer predictable, seasons are no longer predictable, rainy seasons for planting and dry seasons for the things that farmers do in dry seasons are no longer predictable. And even if you could predict them, it's difficult to find the way around them. It's estimated that 85% of the world's poorest people live in rural areas and they rely largely on agriculture. That's about 540 million people. This is an outdated slide. As I have a quote here from John W. MacArthur, not the evangelical preacher and author, but the senior advisor to the UN Foundation and an expert on sustainable development. And he says that the foremost last mile challenge of eliminating extreme poverty by 2030 will be to ensure that these farm families and local economics can reliably boost their incomes for the long term. We saw that firsthand as we were planting trees in the Dominican Republic, that the sustainability is to ensure that families that rely on the land can move out of a cycle of poverty and into a virtuous cycle of flourishing. Agricultural development is one of the most powerful tools to end extreme poverty and to boost shared prosperity. Globally, we have been making great strides in reducing the percentage of people living in extreme poverty. And by extreme poverty, we use the benchmark created by the World Bank of $1.90 a day. There are people that live below that threshold. In fact, there are close to 1 billion people that live under that threshold. In the two decades since 1999, the number of people living in extreme poverty worldwide has fallen by more than 1 billion people. And part of the success in reducing poverty is unfortunately set to be reduced due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And for the first time in 20 years, poverty is likely to increase significantly. And this is why the time for intervention is now. Poverty is complex. Poverty is multidimensional, includes many, many variables. If you live off the land, the health of your ecosystem is critical. And simply increasing finances without considering the environment threatens the long-term sustainability. We use a multidimensional poverty index to guide our work and to measure the impact of what we're doing. And we are constantly tweaking this and reviewing this and examining this. It's one thing to do the work because it feels good. It's another thing to have an impact so that we are accomplishing our purpose. We have these six categories: housing and food and financial stability, farming, time and opportunity, and land. And within those, there are a couple of things that we look at. So for instance, a balanced diet is one of the indices that we use. And then time and opportunity. With secondary school-aged daughters is key to us really feeling like we are making and seeing that we're making an impact in these countries where we work and many around the world. Once girls, daughters reach a certain age, because of circumstances, they're taken out of school and put to work or prepared for marriage. And so one of the things that we measure and that we track is how many families are keeping their daughters in schools through secondary schools. We have, while we don't wave the banner of being a women's empowerment organization, 2/3 of the people that we work with are women, and we are serious about getting families' incomes and situations up to where their daughters stay in school. These categories, which are critical, we see to holistic transformation, risk being lost if we only focused on financial health and stability. So how do we break the cycle of poverty for the rural farmer whose livelihood depends on the land? Well, we've tweaked our approach, our secret sauce, to three pillars. We focus on spiritual renewal, on environmental restoration, and on economic empowerment. And this is our guiding document, our guiding ethos, if I can use that word. For instance, and they're interconnected. So if you look here at spiritual renewal, the output is we train staff, we train church leaders, we develop partnerships with churches in the local communities. And then the outcome, for instance, is that community members see spiritual value in their work and their identity, but also it fosters group solidarity and accountability and decision-making at a local level where all of the community is involved. The impact of that outcome is that community members experience greater purpose and calling, and it's interconnected to the economic empowerment as groups respond to the needs within their communities. And then that impact leads to the goal, which is in spiritual renewal, is that relationships with neighbor, creation, God, and self are restored. For those of you that are that have made global mission something that you want to learn about, a very popular book that many have read that came to me much later in my life, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, there's a book called When Helping Hurts. And it helped me to see that all of the work that we do, especially those that claim Jesus as teacher and guide and salvation and the author and perfecter of our own faith, is that that's really our goal. That's really our calling, is to be reconcilers, right? That we would reconcile folks, help and be an instrument of reconciliation to people with God, people within themselves, people with their neighbor and people with all of creation. And so that is a driving force in Plant with Purpose, is that we are seeking to be in our spiritual renewal pillar, to be reconcilers of people to themselves, to God, to their neighbor, and to the creation. In environmental restoration, the output is ecosystem stakeholders are catalyzed and networked. And we can see that the outcome of that is community stakeholders value and protect their natural environment, but it also affects their economic empowerment. Even though we are focusing on environmental restoration, the ancillary benefit is that group solidarity, accountability, and decision-making are then enhanced. The outcome in environmental restoration is improved ecosystem health. And then environmental restoration goal is that watersheds are healthy and support flourishing in communities. The bottom line is that what we've seen, what we track very closely, is that our approach results in a 55% reduction in poverty based on all of those multidimensional poverty index factors. How we determine where we work and our methodology, we have, I won't say mastered, but we are gaining mastery on a model that we call a watershed model. And a watershed we're defining as a region of land defined by rivers and streams that all flow into a larger body of water. As the environmental improvements happen and agricultural techniques are learned, there is a literal trickle-down effect through the region and from neighbor to neighbor. And what we found in the years that we've been doing this, now 40 years, is that by strategically reaching only half of the families in a watershed, the entire region experiences a reduction in poverty. Ecosystems are restored and deforestation is reversed. The benefits to a community are long-term. What we see in this watershed model approach is that, again, if we target and work with about 50% of the families as their microclimates change due to healthier soil, increased tree coverage that helps the soil retain nutrients and moisture and then prevents erosion and runoff, nature kind of takes over. I would say that God's creation does what God's creation was meant to do, and that is there's a healing process that begins to perpetuate within the environment. Now, within the families, we see families that had never worked together before. They may have been neighbors 1,000 feet away from each other and lived there for generations, but they never thought to work together. And as we help them and empower them to form communities that are beneficial to one another and sustaining, self-sustaining, they begin to tell other people. They see the benefits. You have people that the light bulb comes on and they want to go around and tell their neighbors and their cousins and the folks that live 3 miles down the road or 10 miles down the road. And all of a sudden, people that aren't part of the actively part of the program begin to see the benefits of what we're doing and adopt some of these techniques themselves. So here you see just an illustration of a watershed where you have a town at the top, you have forestry, you have a lake, you have sub-basins, you have watershed divides, for instance, a creek or a stream, you have tributaries, you have aquifers, natural retention, water retention. And so we look using satellite imagery and on the ground mapping and local experts to identify regions where we can have immediate impact. And we see, we look where populations are, we look where folks don't have access to government programs and other ways of finding assistance. And we go into and we identify these regions. And then we look for local church partnerships and community leaders that can help us identify the families that need and desire the assistance that we will come alongside for. Here's our watershed. This is how we, if Austin were an area, you can see at the kind of to the north, at the very top corner, you've got Pflugerville, and then you've got the boundaries that run from there down here south to Buda, and then kind of southwest in the Dripping Springs area. And you've got these lines that are stream segment boundaries. And so this is what a watershed looks like in Texas. And so if we were to identify places where we might want to work, we would, within that watershed, we would get granular in within a couple of miles of one another and identify a quadrant where it's populated and where water sources, for instance, are scarce, where families are struggling because the only land they have is steep and eroded. And that's how we identify where we begin our work. And we may start perhaps in the Northeast. And then as we find health among the families and among the land, we would look for others so that the whole watershed over time would be healed or on its way to healing in an irreversible way. Okay, make sure I jump. So our methodology, as we identify the watersheds and the families and the population where we feel like we will have the most impact the quickest, is we form what is called purpose groups. As we move in to a region and we identify the population there, and we partner with churches and with community leaders, we help these farming families form what we now call a purpose group. And through the purpose group, they're a spiritual community and they're a support community for one another, but they're a savings group. And so we as they form these groups, we give them education on financial literacy and how to develop a savings and loan. And it is all savings based. We don't infuse any capital into their savings groups. And so we teach them the value of being invested, and they have a minimum and a maximum amount that they can bring every week for savings. We help them to determine how to establish guidelines and rates of interest once they get their savings up to a place where they can offer loans to one another. And they form the guidelines and the rules for the loans and the repayment terms and how often you can borrow and the rate of interest. And by the way, those savings groups are earning about 19% right now. And so you're thinking, how can I get a part of that, right? Look, if you can show up to their meetings every week, you can certainly be a part of that. And they hold each other accountable. And in these savings group meetings, they go through core values and they share virtues that they want to live into. And everyone in the wide open brings their dollar or $5 or whatever it is, and they put it in a box and they make a mark, keep an accounting of that. And when it's time for, once the savings is done and they have repayments to be made, right there in front of everyone, they come and they bring their repayment and their loan payment is checked off. And it's a remarkable thing to see. It's a remarkable thing to sit in a room with people that, by their own testimonies, have never worked together, and here they are. They're worried about their neighbor's sick mother and the $200 it's going to take for some medical care, or perhaps an investment. They want to expand their farm, and they want to buy two goats, or they need a tire for their motorcycle. Whatever it is, it's remarkable to see the community invested in the success of their community partner. And then from the spiritual community to the savings group, within those purpose groups, we also conduct farmer field schools where agricultural training is delivered. We help farmers then perform, identify and perform their own experiments. We, in this country, have people that's all they do. They're paid to conduct experiments, and they have land. The Texas A&M, I'm sure the University of Texas, you know, they have, they're dedicated to the development of technology. Well, the farmers we work with don't have the luxury of that, and they're forced to make hard choices. They know, for instance, that it's going to, in the long run, be detrimental to them to cut down trees, but they need to feed their family. They need fuel. They need wood to sell. They need to make charcoal. And so they're forced to make these choices. However, when they come in, we help them build resilience financially. We can teach them the techniques. We can teach them what trees to plant and let them choose, but give them choices. There's a particular type of oak tree that grows super fast, and that can be shade. And then you can have a banana tree that will produce commerce or be something for you, not only to feed yourselves, but to sell. And then underneath the banana tree, you can plant coffee. And then you can mound your land to increase the surface area, and all sorts of techniques to help them choose what works the best for them. And so in these farmer field schools, this is where their ecologies are healed. And a big part of the environmental restoration is tree planting. We still help provide trees for our farmers to plant and plant with purpose. I haven't seen today's statistic, but I would say it's about 63 million trees that our farmers have planted since 1984. And that's a lot of trees. And that's a lot of climates, microclimates being restored and renewed. It's remarkable to see satellite imagery from 10 years ago in the Dominican Republic to today, in the same time of year, in the same region, from sparse trees, a little bit of light green and brown, to deep lush forests that have expanded by 40, 50, 60, 70%. It's just remarkable to see those things. Farmer field schools. So when we introduce our curriculum, we are working at a watershed level. We have modules that include soil conservation, agroforestry, biointensive agriculture, conservation agriculture, and soil fertilizations. The farmers test and co-develop their regenerative agricultural techniques. We don't teach people how to farm. They've been farming for generations. But we can help them with tools to make their farms more productive and more sustainable. And here is a picture of what our techniques help them how they may organize their farms. They ultimately take what they learn and they apply it to their own land. And this is a typical example of a partnering farmer's land. After several years in our program, It's hilly. And before their hard work, it was often barren of any trees and frequently very, very rocky. Heartland farmers apply 89% more diverse regenerative agricultural techniques than those who aren't a part of our program. And what we've seen is, after a few short years, as much as a 37% yield, a higher crop yield. In the savings groups, members save money by depositing small amounts. They can access loans. Members repay loans with a reasonable interest rate, and groups also collect a social fund to help assist with community needs. Each member elects its own leader and sets its own bylaws. And the participants have 2.5 months of savings on average. This was something that stuck with me and was an aha moment for me. In the country of Haiti, which many would agree is perhaps the most difficult place on earth to live right now, if it's not the gangs, it's the hurricanes. And if it's not hurricanes, it's earthquakes. And they don't, you know, they're not discerning of or compassionate as when they'll strike, right? But I saw a statistic right before I joined Plant Purpose that in Haiti, the members of the Plant with Purpose purpose groups have an average of 2.5 months worth of savings. Now, I don't know what neighborhoods you live in here in the Austin area, but if you walked outside your front door and took a rock and threw it in four directions, north, south, east, and west, you'll probably hit a house that has no savings. Yet the farmers in Haiti that work with Plant with Purpose have 2.5 months worth of savings. And that is after going from one meal a day to three meals a day. That is after sending their daughters to school. That is after improving their homes, or perhaps going from a dirt floor to something other than dirt. And that was amazing to me, that something that we're doing in the way we are training people to handle their finances and invest in their lives is working. And what we saw that while they have 2.5 months of savings on average, less than 1 month of savings for those who had any savings for non-participating families. And here is, this is just a photo of a savings group. And they are, you can see that she's got money in one hand and they've got their accounting for loans and how. This just gives you a picture of what you'd see if you went to visit a purpose group. Here is a breakdown of the types of loans. So we have the percentage of households. Crops, the loans for crops is by far the highest number for animals or livestock, for education, for health, and for other businesses. I want to share a quick story that I recently read about 6 weeks ago as I came to Austin for another visit. And I was thumbing through some documents to kind of prepare for a meeting. And I saw a story that happened recently in Democratic Republic of Congo. Was a husband and wife who had a family farm. The wife was primarily the farmer, and she was a member of a purpose group. Her husband was finishing nursing school and was trying to get a job as a nurse. He finished nursing school and went for months and could not find a job as a nurse, which seems odd to me, because in this country, if you get a nursing degree, you're probably going to get a job pretty quickly, but not so in the Congo. And so the husband saw what was going on with his wife's Farm and the Savings Group, he joined another purpose group not far away so that they could increase the amount of their savings. As I mentioned before, they have minimum amounts and maximum amounts. So in order to increase your savings more than the maximum amount, he joined a purpose group and began saving. After time, he was able, and they were able through their savings, for him to start a pharmacy. Over time, that pharmacy became a clinic. Those aren't things that we regularly measure, but the anecdotes that we're hearing of the way that our folks are empowered to start businesses, to think in ways that they probably would have never thought before. That's what the purpose groups, that's one of the things that a purpose group can do. The spiritual impact. Our community works together to solve problems. 96% of people that we surveyed that are participants in a purpose group said that. My work is a good use of my talents. 70% of the survey respondents, of those that we surveyed that are participants in a purpose group, said that. I now feel pride in the work I do. 95% of our purpose group members said that. That was remarkable to me, as that's one of the things that we begin with in our purpose groups as we talk about spiritual renewal. We take them through a theology of work, that the world needs their God-given gifts and their talents, that they have talents and gifts that have been bestowed upon them by their Creator. And I think that's just such a wonderful testament to the work that we do. We don't go in with a preconceived idea that folks have to profess, say a certain set of words in a certain order in order to be spiritually renewed. So this is Lorraine's story. She has offered this quote: "A plant with purpose has also helped renew my spiritual life. I understand that God is love and can see the way our work is blessed. I've learned to live out the words that are in our group slogan: God, work, mutual aid, savings, self-development, and environmental restoration. And this has completely changed my life. I used to seek help so my kids can eat, but now I am able to work and I can help others." And she's in Burundi, which is year in and year out considered perhaps the most food insecure country in the world. Where we work, we're in the Dominican Republic. We started as a response to hurricanes to reforest there. We are in Mexico, in the states of Oaxaca and Chiapas and Puebla. My wife and I were in Oaxaca in October, and this is a gentleman that we met. His name is Gustavo, and Gustavo has been working with Plant with Purpose for 25 years. We entered southern Mexico 25 years ago. Gustavo has planted 2,000 to 3,000 trees himself per year for 25 years. That's 50,000 to 75,000 trees that he has personally planted. And this is the mountainside where I call it Gustavo's forest. Anyone that plants 75,000 trees on a mountainside, I'm okay with that being his own personal forest. But that's commitment. And that is the thing that he takes such pride in it. And it just doesn't benefit him, and it benefits his entire community. This is also in Oaxaca in October. This is a water distribution system that we are partnering with an organization that you all may be familiar with called Living Water International. And it's a joint pilot project. There is an aquifer, a spring, about, I don't know, 400 yards away. And so we've tapped into the spring, and Living Water and Plant with Purpose have built a pipeline, and then it goes up to a pumping station that is solar powered, and it distributes water through the community for all kinds of things, not just irrigation, but for water for them to use in their households. We work in Haiti, as I mentioned, and our hope is undefeated in Haiti for the purpose group members there. Hope seems to be dying from the outside in as we look at it, but not within the people of Haiti, and it's certainly those working with Plant with Purpose. We're also in Tanzania. We work around the base of Mount Kilimanjaro, and we are working in one of the most biodiverse places on the planet to keep the planet moving in the right direction toward healing. And we have an annual tree planting competition that the whole community gets involved in. And then we're in Northern Thailand. We've been there for 20 years, and in Burundi. And we're in the Congo, as I mentioned, in Ethiopia. And we help the Church of Ethiopia protect the forests there. And then we've just launched in Malawi. The ribbon cutting for our Malawi program was just last week. We don't really have time for this video, but it is available on our website, and I'll make sure that Mona gets it. And if you're interested, we can distribute it. And so to date, we have 460,000 direct participants. And then from that, families. So that's the direct participants are the adults that are part of the purpose groups. Excuse me, that's not right. 460,000 is the total number. We have about 80,000 families, which translates to 460,000 people. We have planted, as of the day that this slide was made, 62,747,000 trees. Member equity in those purpose groups across our 9 countries, the farmers have amassed $12 million in equity. What that means is if Plant with Purpose ceased to exist today, they have $12 million to continue lending, investing, safety nets, community pools of money to help improve the community. That is the power of sustainability. That is the power of partnership, that if we as an organization cease to exist, they still have $12 million that they are stewards of themselves within their groups. So, next steps. What can you do? Well, we have vision trips. We travel to the programs, and we introduce supporters and potential supporters to the work we do. And you don't put your gloves on, gardening gloves on, and you go dig in their farms. You go and spend time, and you listen to their stories, and you allow them to extend hospitality and gratitude for the ways that you and us as partners have empowered them. There are trips in the summer and in the fall. I'll be going to the DR next month. There's a Chiapas, Mexico trip and a Thailand trip each in March. So that aren't on here. But what you can also do is support a purpose group. Maybe as a Sunday school class, or maybe it's a family thing. It takes about $3,500 to fund and sustain a purpose group. If you want to, as a church, get something tangible that you support, build water cisterns. We have a church in Houston that gives us the funds, donates the funds to build 20 water cisterns in Mexico every year. In southern Mexico, it's dry. And so access to water is important. And a cistern costs about $1,000. So the church supports us in that way. We have St. Clement's, an Episcopal congregation in Minnesota, supports us not just through the church, but dozens of members support us individually as well. And so that's something that you can do. If you're moved to help the farming families around the world move from poverty into flourishing and into prosperity even, then that's certainly a way that you can do that. And then if you just want to be a part of what's going on in your community, from time to time I hear about events that you can get your hands dirty and in prayer and in solidarity with the farmers around the world, plant trees in Austin, plant trees wherever. And if you want to do it in community, that's even better, with your heart oriented toward Mexico or Haiti or Malawi. But please feel like know that there are opportunities for you to live into that invitation that you may hear from the Spirit of God to be a part of moving the kingdom of God further toward healing. Oh, that's my lovely wife, Demi, and I standing over. We were in a community that we work with and looking over the hills of Oaxaca in a complete watershed area that is learning to thrive and healing. So I invite you to reach out to me if you have questions, if you have you want to know more about vision trips, if you want to know about becoming a supporter, if you want to know about local opportunities that I may come across from time to time. I couldn't list off some right away, but I know that some are coming as I've been in conversation with some folks that are trying to restore their communities here in Austin. And I thank you. I thank you for your attention, and I offer you this time if you have questions right now. I think we have about 5 or 10 minutes if you'd like to ask me anything. Yes.
Can you decide, I mean, I know you talked about looking at the topography and the geography side of it, but sort of at a higher level, like where do you decide to go?
That's a great question. Thank you for it. That's out of my realm of responsibility, but I can tell you this. We now look for ways within the areas where we are that we already have staff. So we have kind of three regions. We have Hispaniola, Latin America, and the Caribbean, with Mexico, Haiti, and Dominican Republic. And then we have Eastern Africa with Malawi and Tanzania and Burundi and Ethiopia and the DRC. And then we have Asia Pacific with Northern Thailand. And so since we're already there, I don't know if this will help answer the question, likely our net, although we just launched Malawi, it may be 2 or 3 years before we launch in another country, it will likely be Cambodia or Myanmar or Laos, because we have staff and we have folks in that region that, you know, to kind of spread and be better stewards of what we're, you know, the salaries and things that it takes to get there. That's, and then we'll look within those countries that we know need the assistance, and then we'll get more granular as I showed you. But so for, at this point, we'll base it on where we can make the best use of the money that we're already spending. Great question. Other questions? Yes.
You talked about trying to create conditions for local control or local direction.
Yes.
So do you have an example of where our, so for example, your group here in the United States, are you simply providing funds because this group has developed the expertise to direct themselves? Just curious.
No, excellent question. So our staff in, as I mentioned, North America, and then one now in Israel, is about 45 people. Our international staff is another 450 people. We go into countries and we hire local experts and we get the best of the best. We know we offer great salaries and we can attract local, we can, you know, country managers in Burundi and Tanzania and Thailand, and we have partnerships. We partner with an organization in Thailand. But we seek the best of the best in agronomists in spiritual renewal sorts of people, and hiring church leaders that that may be volunteers but have years of training and education and experience. And we hire tree experts in country, because they spend daily time with our partnering farmers. And so that's one of the ways that we have that. We empower the local communities is that we hire. And, if we post a job, there may be hundreds, if not thousands of applicants for the jobs. And, some of them are not qualified and they are interested, but we have dozens, if not hundreds of qualified candidates that are local. It's not a bunch of expats. Good question. Thank you. Other questions? Well, my email is posted there, and Art knows how to reach me. And there's cards on the table. Please take, I've got our annual report, a few copies of that. There is a sower, which is a quarterly sort of update with highlights on our programs. There's a Malawi card that just talks about the launch of our Malawi program. And then there's a one pager that's really informative and gives you a QR code to get to our website. And we have one of the most beautiful websites of any nonprofit anywhere. So I thank you for your time. And I give you dismissal permission right now, but feel free to do what you do. Thank you.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.